Destination, freedom. Destination, freedom. Dramatizations of the great democratic traditions of the Negro people is brought to you by station WMAQ as a part of the pageant of history and of America's own Destination Freedom. There at some time exists a crisis in the history of a nation when great leaders are needed to prick the national conscience and to pioneer a path towards the extension of human freedom. Such a crisis was the ascendancy of the slave power in 19th century America. Such leaders were a Massachusetts printer and a Boston lawyer, William Lloyd Garrison and Wendell Phillips. Their relentless and determined fight for the abolition of slavery in their day has made their names revered among the benefactors of mankind. In a two-part series entitled The Liberators, Destination Freedom today brings you the story of the first of these abolitionists, William Lloyd Garrison.
Boston, Massachusetts, Wednesday afternoon, October 21st, 1835. I was working in my law offices on Church Street. I didn't know how long I'd sat there before I heard the bells. But it seemed almost as though I'd been asleep, and the bells were awakening me. I looked at the calendar to see what holiday it was. Nothing was listed. I threw open the window. Down on another street, people were pouring out of their houses and rushing toward Wilkes Street like water spilling from a dam. Jumping, leaping, waving, shouting. I ran downstairs and out into the street. They swept me on like a tide until I found myself in front of a carpenter's shop where the crowd had stopped.
Hey! Hey, look up there! There he is! There he is!
I looked up. On the second floor of the shop, they were holding a man, a single man. Four men held him where all the crowd could see, and the man next to me shouted,
"That's the traitor! That's him! Throw him down!"
Someone looped a rope around his chest and slid him down into the waiting hands of the mob. I stood tiptoe and strained to get a glimpse at him. He was a thin, hawk-faced man. He was walking between his captors with a smile on his bleeding lips. A faraway, detached look was in his eyes, and his head was held high. I tried to keep up with him, but the pushing and shoving beat me back. I turned to a man in the crowd and asked, "Who is that man?"
"That's the devil. That's the Massachusetts man.
He's a dangerous heretic, an infidel, a traitor."
"That's the common criminal. Traitor, that's what he is."
"But who is he? If he's so dangerous, why don't I know about him?"
"Who are you?"
"I'm Wendell Phillips, the lawyer. Who is that man?"
"Well, Mr. Phillips, that man is William Lord Garrison, the abolitionist."
"Abolitionist? Now do you understand?"
"You understand what we're talking about? Abolitionist. A dangerous man."
Abolitionist. The word echoed in my head.
Abolitionist.
I had heard that word a thousand times. But who were the abolitionists? Who was Garrison?
Abolitionist.
Why did they hate him? What have you done?
Abolitionist.
Why didn't I know about him?
Mr. Phillips, you being of the Boston aristocracy, you haven't had time to see the problems the people have.
Why should any man be hanged for what he believes? Why is he my enemy?
Because he threatens to overthrow the slave system. Look at his record, attorney. You've been asleep. You should have heard him when he first came to Boston.
If you could look at his record, if you had been noticing his record, you would have heard him when he first came.
Gentlemen, I came to Boston for only one purpose. That is to establish a newspaper which will champion the cause of liberty.
What
for the
voices said were true.
I
had been asleep. His record was open. If I had noticed or looked into it, I would have found that as far as Boston was concerned, it began 5 years ago, October 11th, 1830. Two printers had come into Boston to establish a newspaper. One, this same William Lloyd Garrison, was explaining his aims to a small gathering in the home of the liberal Colonel Joseph May, Boston merchant.
Of the abolition movement, and gentlemen, this may be the beginning of a new era in American democracy.
Young man, you'll pardon some of my guests for being skeptical of your chances of bringing about the end of slavery with a weekly newspaper. If you're so sincere in your efforts to eliminate slavery, why didn't you go to Washington to set up this newspaper? Washington, as you know, is the center of the government.
Washington may be the center of the government, but Boston is the center of opinion. And I believe there is more need to preach the gospel of freedom here than any section where slavery exists.
Well, to speak frankly, Garrison, there is more prejudice, apathy, and interests who profit from slaveholding here in Boston than anywhere in Washington. Boston, believe me, punishes agitators much more severely.
Quite so. Have you thought of that, young man? Have you thought of that?
I have. To bring equality to Negroes in this country, it is true, a few white victims must be sacrificed to open the eyes of this nation and to show the tyranny of our law. I expect and am willing to be persecuted, imprisoned, and bound for advocating African rights. And I should deserve to be a slave if I shrunk from that duty or that danger. Are there any other questions?
Yes, well, thanks for coming, young man. I'm sure you've given us something to think about.
There was a chill in the room, for every northerner there, with the exception of the host, owned slaves or made a profit from the traffic. And the records would show that through the months of October, November, December, 1830 in Boston, the two printers, Garrison and his partner Isaac Knapp, searched for a place to set up their press, spoke at meetings of Negro freedmen, were turned down by suspicious landlords, until finally they went into a bakery shop at number 30 Federal Street on December 29th.
I just took two hotcakes out of the oven just a minute ago, and here's two gentlemen coming in to buy. Here now.
Madam, we didn't come for cakes.
What do you want? Conversation?
Upstairs, you've got some rooms we'd like to rent.
Oh. Well, come this way. Up these stairways. Now, be careful. Watch that broken step.
And they went up above the bakery shop to a wide and grimy stretch of space.
Well, is this what you want?
It's truly an awful-looking place, William.
How much does it rent for?
10 shillings a week.
And it's quite an amount.
Take it or leave it.
We'll take it.
I'll take the rent in advance. Well, you men know a bargain when you see one. Now, you'll find me a woman who always minds her own business, no one else's. And if there's any secrets you've got, they're safe with me.
We keep no secrets, madam.
Then tell me what you intend to use this place for.
We'd rather wait until we're established before we tell that, madam. Some people might object.
Oh, I see. Well, give me your name. I'll have to put them downstairs on the doorway.
Madam, we'll give you our names, but until we're ready to begin working, we'd rather it not be put on the doorway.
Well, in case you receive any mail, you know.
We don't think we'll be getting any mail for some time, madam. No one knows we're here yet.
But the record shows that already someone knew the names and addresses of the pair, and the next morning the landlady was terrified at their mail.
Mister!
What is it?
She's trembling like a leaf.
I was opening up shop when four men walked in. Asked about the new tenant.
Who knows we're here?
They told me to give you this noose and this message.
The other end of this noose is in the hands of slaveholders. With each word against slavery you print, we shall tighten it. The arms of the slaveholders are strong in North and South. We hold the rope around your neck.
The record would show that the rope of the slaveholders was long and strong, and followed the printers to their third-floor garret. But the printers proceeded to set up their press. And that night, printer Knapp looked out of the window and came over to his partner.
William.
Yes?
Look downstairs across the street. A crowd of the slave sellers from the docks looking up this way. They'll hound us until we stop.
Are you frightened?
Well, I don't know. sometimes to be an abolitionist, to be the target of ridicule and scorn and threats and always the
constant... We're not the only abolitionists. Others will follow when they learn.
Yes, of course you're right. We'll go ahead. The type is ready. Oh, what name did you say you wanted to give the paper?
Looking downstairs at those slaveholders, I can think of only one title.
Yes?
The Liberator.
And the record would show that The Liberator first came off the press in Boston, January 1st, 1831, printed on borrowed type in a dingy room, with the beds of the editors on the floor beside the press. They lived on bread and milk and fruitcakes from the bakery below. And the record would show that the press rolled on with its fiery copy, while a timid reader said to the editor,
I agree wholeheartedly with the abolition of slavery, but I don't agree with the harsh language you use. If you moderate your tones, you'd convert more to your cause.
Yes.
And the Liberator's answer, February 12, 1831.
To speak in mild language about atrocious crimes is to commit treason. On the subject of slavery, I do not wish to think or speak or write with moderation. No. Tell a man whose house is on fire to give a moderate alarm. Tell him to moderately rescue his wife from the hands of the ravisher. Tell the mother to gradually extricate her babe from the fire into which it has fallen. But tell me not to use moderation in a cause like the present. I am in earnest. I will not equivocate. I will not excuse. I will not retreat a single inch, and I will be heard.
And the record would show that even his host read his words and said,
My friend, try to moderate your indignation and keep very cool. Why, you're all on fire.
Brother May, I have need to be all on fire, for I have mountains of ice to melt all around me. Established institutions are not overthrown by mild pleading. There is not an instance in the history of the world where gradualism and mildness ever brought freedom to anybody. I speak in tones of thunder because those I wish to awaken are in a deep, deep sleep.
Of course you're right.
Through February, March, April, the press thundered on and awakened the powerful shipbuilders and owners who dealt in the slave traffic. They came to the governor of Massachusetts, the record shows, May 12, 1831.
Now, gentlemen, I'm surprised. I'm surprised, gentlemen. Letting a little 2x4 publication like this upset you.
This paper has been sent all across the country, even to England. Slaves and poor whites in the South are reading it. This madman Garrison is deliberately trying to incite rebellion. And you must find ways to put it down, Governor.
Of course. Gentlemen. When the time comes, I won't hesitate. But why give this fanatic so much attention? I've had his so-called publication investigated. Why, he hardly prints 1,000 copies. And do you know where his main support comes from?
Where?
From three Negroes who've settled in Boston. They pay for his printing. You men see to it that they don't have so many jobs that they can afford to support this Garrison. Believe me, gentlemen, you have nothing to worry about from the Liberator. Take my word for it.
Boston stockholders in the slave estates took the words of the governor. But the record shows that citizens in adjacent states and on plantations were taking the words of the Liberator. And the printer thundered.
I have relinquished the expectation that slaveholders will ever, by moral persuasion, consent to emancipate their victims. From the time that Pharaoh and his hosts were drowned in the Red Sea, down to the present day, they have persisted in their evil course until sudden destruction came upon them, or they were compelled to surrender their ill-gotten power in some other manner.
The paper spoke, and on August 22, 1831, in Southampton County, Virginia, Nat Turner, a slave, gathered a band of followers and rose in a revolt that terrified the slave states. News of it shot through Boston like hissing steam.
Stretcher! Train revolt, Virginia special! Lancer, slave Boston abolitionist special!
Boy, give me a paper.
Yes, sir. Oh, yes, sir. Here.
Say, are you Garrison?
I am.
Say, there goes the man who started the rebellion. There goes Garrison.
Here, Garrison.
And wherever Garrison went, crowds began to follow. And in the crowd were sympathizers of the slave system, and they hounded the printers off the street. And the record shows that on October 1st, 1831, Elijah Hammersby, boat owner and former planter, knocked at the printer's door.
Garrison, I came here to warn you that the law-abiding citizens of Boston are sick and tired of harboring a maniac who screams for immediate and unconditional freeing of the slaves.
I've been told that before. Slavery is wrong.
No, I've been told before that slavery is wrong. That's not the issue, man. A great portion of the business of the North as well as the South is based on free slave labor. When you attack slavery, you're attacking private property, and we don't...
That, too, I've been told.
Well, this you have it. None of your businessmen in the North or slaveholders in the South can afford to sit back and let you succeed in overthrowing slavery.
What will you do about it?
We don't intend to allow you to go on, sir. We will put you down by fair means if possible, by foul if necessary, beginning from this day.
Beginning from that day, the noose with the long rope began to get tighter about the necks of the two printers. And the press rolled on, and the converts came in.
Give me 30 papers today, Mr. Garrison.
What do you do with them all, Miss Finley?
Oh, I carry them about like little seeds. Whenever I see soil fertile enough, I plant one of your papers. It's surprising how many friends of freedom can grow from just one issue of the Liberator. I'll take these out and plant them among the people.
And as the noose tightened, the seed set off by the Liberator began to sprout, to spread with the wind, to reach southern cities and slave plantations. The records show the governor of Georgia cried out,
"The Senate and House of Representatives of Georgia have appropriated $5,000 to be paid by the governor to anyone who shall arrest, bring to trial, and prosecute to conviction the editor or publisher of a certain newspaper called The Liberator, published in the town of Boston."
November 30th, 1831, a retort from South Carolina.
If the people of Massachusetts permit fanatics to arouse the good, peaceful citizens against the institution of slavery, we should be justified in invading that territory to silence that paper.
And on the night of December 3rd, a group of men knocked at the door of one John Lamb, white farmer of Georgia.
Oh, well, good evening, Mr. Postman. Never expected to see you delivering mail this time of night.
I didn't come to deliver mail, John.
Huh?
Came to pick up some I brought for you.
What's that?
The Liberator, that abolitionist paper.
But
did you find it, fellas?
Just
what I thought. What'd I tell you?
Well, no, see here.
You know it's against the law to read Lloyd Garrison's sheets.
But I didn't
you
mean
to. You subscribe to it and don't deny it.
Listen.
Boys, I think you'd better take him out the crowd.
No.
A man with such thoughts in his head's
please
dangerous.
Listen to me.
Our
please.
Friends in the North will get Garrison.
No.
John Lamb was tarred and feathered and set afire. The next weekend, governors of 6 slave states, seeing the paper and pamphlets of Garrison mysteriously appearing in their mailboxes, made a proposal.
We propose that the President of the United States demand that Massachusetts extradite Garrison to the South. And the people of the South must offer an adequate reward for any person who will deliver the said Garrison into the hands of the authorities of any state south of the Potomac, dead or alive.
But the Liberator cried back,
"Know this, those who seek to kidnap me, that we despise your threats as much as we deplore your infatuation. Nay, more, know that 100 men stand ready to fill our place
as soon as it is made vacant by violence.
Garrison, will you stop that devilish press?
Did you say something, sir?
I said stop that devilish press so you can hear me.
Isaac.
Hey.
Ease her down.
All right, Chief.
Now, listen to me. Every state in the South is demanding that I, as governor of Massachusetts, stop your newspapers from going across the state borders. Now, how long do you intend running this sheet?
As long as there's a single slave in these United States, Governor.
Then indeed there's no help for you.
Did you come here to help me?
I came here to tell you that I will no longer be responsible for what steps outraged citizens of this state feel necessary to take to safeguard their investments.
Is this a threat, Governor?
It's more than a threat. Unless you keep that press still, it's a death sentence. Do you understand it?
Very well. Isaac.
Yes?
Start the presses.
It was reported that the Liberator came out again, January 5th, 1832, and anti-slavery sentiment had grown deeper. Abolitionists flocked to the printer's garret like pilgrims to a shrine. All day, January 5th, 1832, crowds hurled rocks at the garret and defied the printer to come out. And at night, a knock came that was to bring them out and keep them out.
Garrison. Garrison, wake up. Ooh, where is my pistol?
What is it?
The devils have come back for us. Listen.
I'll look out the window, see who's down there.
Keep away from that window.
Shh, let me see. Well, there's only a woman down there. I'll go down, let her in.
Be careful.
Who is it?
Miss Finley.
Come in.
I've come all the way from South Carolina. I've been distributing your newspaper wherever I saw the soil was fertile. I come for more paper.
Isaac, help me with her. She's walked 500 miles dodging slaveholders and overseers and leaving a newspaper that was outlawed.
She's one of us.
She's more than we are. Isaac, some of those we've recruited into the fight have gone ahead of us. It's time we got out and caught up with them.
But we print the paper. What else can we do?
The printed word is not the most persuasive way of bringing out the truth. I'm going out to speak to the people.
They'll knock your head off.
Perhaps. But they'll hear me first.
And it was reported that the printer went out and found meeting halls, and the crowds heard him declare,
"Every man and woman in America who believes in the cause of equality among all its citizens must join a society that will fight for the extension of human rights. Those willing, meet with me at the African Baptist Church in Belknap Street in Boston. Join together, and the tyrants will tremble."
There were those who came to cheer and those who came to jeer. And on the night of January 7th, 1832, a fierce wind drove snow, rain, and sleet through the cobbled streets of Boston. Inside the African Baptist Church, 15 white and Negro citizens of Boston sat, and Colonel May said,
"I suppose you're disappointed in such a small turnout to organize your society, Mr. Garrison. After 2 years of work, these are the only abolitionists who would come out to form an anti-slavery society."
No, I'm not disappointed. I feel gratified. I'm reminded that Jesus began his crusade with an even smaller number.
And this small group of 15 drew up a document that read,
"We, the undersigned, hold that every person of full age and sane mind has a right to immediate freedom from personal bondage of whatsoever kind, unless imposed by the sentence of law for the commission of some crime."
The document was signed, and the anti-slavery society spread, and the printer was invited to take his fight for freedom to England.
Isn't there enough opposition here without looking for more in England, Garrison? It's not their problem.
Slavery is the problem of every civilized people. If the English will give us moral support, It'll be impossible for the Northerners to uphold the slaveholders in the South.
They'll hate you for taking the problem to a foreign country.
If I am able to free one slave in doing so, I'll accept their hate. I'll speak in England.
In England, he organized an anti-slavery society, and his strong, true words won much sympathy.
I came to ask your moral support in fighting for the abolition of slavery because my native land professes to be the land of the free and the asylum of the oppressed, but falsifies those professions and shamelessly plays the tyrant. I accuse her of suffering a large portion of her population to be lacerated, starved, and plundered without law and without justification, at the will of petty tyrants. I accuse her of legalizing on an enormous scale licentiousness, fraud, cruelty, and murder.
The words echoed back across the ocean and were picked up by slaveholders and those who had invested heavily in the traffic. Crowds gathered around newsstands in Boston, and speakers picked up the cry.
You read what that Garrison is telling the Englishmen? Asking for them to come over and interfere with our private affairs. What do you do with a man like that?
You hang him! Hang him!
He's a traitor! All the abolitionists are traitors! What shall we do with him when he sets foot on these grounds?
And it is reported that on October 21st, 1835, when the abolitionist returned to his hometown and entered his print shop,
Garrison, what are you doing here?
I'm back from England, man. Aren't you going to welcome me?
Welcome you? Don't you know crowds are going up and down the streets looking for you? Didn't I tell you not to come back? I wrote you.
I got your letter.
Then why didn't you stay?
Because this is my home. This is my fight. I had an engagement to speak tonight.
You forget that engagement. Get out of town. The only people in that hall are those who hate you most.
Good. Those are the ones who should hear me.
And it was reported that he went to the crowded hall and edged his way through the crowd, stood upon the platform as brick and stone crashed around him, and called out,
"Traitor! Traitor! There's the traitor!
Listen to me! Listen to me! Listen! Listen! Am I a traitor because of what I said in England? Friends, I speak the truth, painful, humiliating, and terrible as it seems to you. It is because of my affection for my country that I do not parley with her crimes. I know that she can neither be truly happy nor prosperous while she continues to manacle and brutalize every sixth child born on her soil, the Negro people."
And it was reported that the crowd surged upon the stage and drove the printer off and into the street. A carpenter saw him running and reached out to save him.
Here, come inside. Come in here. You can trust me. I'm an abolitionist, too.
The printer went inside, but the mob followed and caught him as he stood on the second floor of the shop. Someone looped a rope around his chest and yanked him off the windowsill and slid him down into the waiting hands of the mob. And I asked questions, but the crowd only sneered at me and said,
"That's Garrison! William Lloyd Garrison!"
"What has he done?"
"Aye, if you could look at his record, you'd see. If you'd been noticing his record, you'd understand. You'd understand."
I hadn't noticed the record I was to read later, but I noticed a thin, hawk-faced man walking with his head erect in the midst of a mad crowd. And he drew me to him as though he'd called my name. The police came and broke through the crowd, snatched him from the ropes. I followed him to jail, asked the officers to let me talk to him. Inside his cell, he looked up at me.
"Who are you? Why did they let you in?"
"I'm Wendell Phillips, the lawyer."
"I've heard of you. You're the son of the ex-mayor of Boston. I don't think you'd be interested in my case."
"I'm interested in finding out what it takes to become an abolitionist."
"You? What converted you? Have you been reading my newspaper?"
"It was not your newspaper that converted me. It was the mob."
"Bless you, son.
Will you let me join the abolitionists? Can we be partners?" I reached down and took his bloody, beaten hands in mine and squeezed them. I did not know what dangers the future would bring me. I did not care. I became an abolitionist to help this man, William Lloyd Garrison, in extending freedom in America. You have just heard the first chapter of a two-chapter series on the great abolitionists, William Lloyd Garrison and Wendell Phillips. Next week, we bring you the final chapter of The Liberator. Destination Freedom is written by Richard Durham, produced by Homer Heck, and directed by Dick Loughran. The role of William Lloyd Garrison was played by George Kluge. Wendell Phillips was played by Maurice Copeland. Others in the cast were Fred Pinkard, Janice Kingslow, Wiley Hancock, Dean Almquist, and Oscar Brown, Jr. The special music was composed by Emil Soderstrom and was played by Elwin Owen and Jose Bethencourt. Our technician was Gary DeVlieg. Sound effects by Cliff Mueller. This is Charles Mountain inviting you to join us again next week when Destination Freedom will tell Chapter 2 of The Liberator, the story of abolitionist Wendell Phillips. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.